Hey, good morning. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. We're here every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 talking about everything you can imagine, every issue of the day.
Well put.
That is the Al of the group. Well, in the country right now, it is hard to find an issue that is not divided along partisan, that does not have a partisan divide. No matter what you say, there is someone on the other side who's usually a different political persuasion than you. Except we think we found the one thing that all people can agree on, and that is early childhood education. What is interesting is that in early childhood education, everyone loves it. The First Five Fund did a poll, and what they found was that, or First 5 Years Fund, 82% of Republicans, 85% of Independents, and 97% of Democrats support making quality early education for children from birth to five more affordable for working families. I mean, is there any other issue like this? It's pretty amazing that there's so much support. So this coming week is the Week of the Young Child, so we thought it would be the perfect week to discuss early childhood education, and we have two experts joining us today. Monica Brinkerhoff will be joining us in the second half, and this morning we have Penelope Jacks, the former Southern Arizona Director of Children's Action Alliance and an expert on policy impacting children, along with being the chair for Strong Start Pima County.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So one of the things we'd like to discuss is the new plan that's in the, going on, and also what the benefits, not only to a child, but to the community, are of having a strong early childhood experience for kids.
Well, it's such an easy thing to talk about because the benefits are so clear. But first, let me talk about what the difference between the current proposal and the one that was on the ballot in 2017. The main difference is the 2017 ballot included City of Tucson children, and this is now countywide. So every child under 200% of the poverty level, which for a family of four is about $50,000 a year, every child under 200% of the poverty level would be eligible for a scholarship to attend high-quality preschool. That's the big difference. The other difference is it's not funded by a sales tax, and that it's not.
How is it funded?
It's funded by the county. The proposal is defunded by the county from general funds.
A few years ago, the Southern Arizona Women's Fund did this study of women, working women in poverty, and one of the things was so astounding to me, and that is that they said a working single mother with young children, the cost of childcare is 98% for that person. And what the general idea is, it should be around 7%.
That is correct. It costs about the same to send a child to high quality childcare as it does to send a child to the University of Arizona. That it's about $10,000 a year, which is a tremendous hit for a young family, particularly if they have two kids. Very few families could afford $20,000 in cash going out of their monthly budget or their annual budget.
Right. One of the examples they gave was teachers, and their income level, as soon as that child hits kindergarten, their whole life changed.
It is absolutely true. Preschool is one of the most expensive things a family can do. And for many women, it's the thing that keeps them out of the job market altogether. It is simply not worth it to them to go to work.
So in this new plan, you've done this for a few years. You have been the, you know, representative of Strong Start. What are the benefits and the drawbacks to early childhood? First to the child, and then later, and then I want to ask you about how it affects the community we live in.
Yeah, as you said earlier, this is one of the few things that everybody agrees on. There really are no drawbacks. There are only benefits. And the benefits to the child are very, very clear. The children who attend high-quality preschool are ready to start kindergarten and ready to learn. I actually started my career before I became a lawyer as a kindergarten teacher. And on day one and right to the last day of school, I could tell which children had been to high-quality preschool and which children had not. The kids who didn't know how to turn the pages of a book. They didn't know how to sit in circle. They didn't know how to listen. The kids who had were ready to sit down and learn. So the kids who had not took up so much time compared to the kids who had that it slowed everybody down. So it's a benefit to the children who have been. It's been a benefit to the children who would otherwise be behind. It's also a huge benefit in terms of long-term success in school. Kids who have been to high-quality preschool have a much higher rate of reading at grade level in grade 3, which is the best predictor for graduation from high school, which is the best predictor for graduation from college. So kids who have high-quality preschool tend to graduate from high school at a much higher rate, from college at a much higher rate, have a much higher wage lifetime. And then there's the sort of this more direct societal issues. Parents can work. Parents can contribute. Parents can pay taxes. There's lower dependence on welfare. There's lower involvement with the criminal justice system. James Heckman, who is a Nobel laureate economist, estimates that the investment of $1 in early childhood repays $16, and that's better than virtually any blue chip you'd ever heard of.
You know, I was thinking on gun control. There's high polls across the country in favor of some kind of action to register or to background checks or whatnot. Yet, it never seems to happen. People point out the IRA, or not the IRA, the NRA. My God, the poor Irish, I apologize. If everyone's for it, if it sounds absolutely correct that it makes a huge difference, it'll bring people out of poverty, what then kept it from passing the first time, and what's your guess about how it'll do this time?
Well, I think the past is the past, so it's not good to guess about what happened then. I'm pretty clear that what's happening right now is the fear of spending money, fear of taxpayers saying we don't want to spend taxpayer money for anything that benefits anyone other than my child directly. And politicians are frightened about that. What we do know is that politicians and leaders who have supported early childhood in other jurisdictions gain trust and respect from their voters. So rather than being a loser for them, in every community it's been a winner for them. So I have hope that our leaders in the Pima County Board of Supervisors will see that and will support this, because nobody is debating the policy at this point. Everyone agrees it's good. It's really now a political question.
So what is the current availability of high-quality schools? There's another study that this group Cityscape did, and they evaluated cities, the 40 largest cities, on what their childcare was like. That was one of the things they did. Phoenix got a bronze, and Tucson did not even get the bronze. We were sub-bronze.
Right.
Lead.
Lead.
Coal.
Coal.
So, an old pair of socks.
Yes. So in Pima County, we have about 27,000 3- and 4-year-olds. Of those, about half of them live under the 200% of poverty.
Can you say those numbers again?
27,000 3- and 4-year-olds. Half of those live under 200% of the poverty level. 70% of those are children of color. And about less than 20% attend high-quality preschool. Many preschools have closed since 2009, when the state severely curtailed their subsidies. And the subsidy level for those who do get help is 19 years old, out of date.
You know, it's interesting when we think about spending money on just for your Board of Supervisors district or area. In point of fact, when you spend money, and let's just pick something arbitrarily, roads, you don't just spend it on where I drive. You spend it on roads for the county, and you spend it, and that there's a need, potholes, heavy traffic, or a light, then you address that need. So for the county, it would strike me, if there are these people 50% below the poverty level, and it really shows that it works, Isn't that the same thing as sort of education road, or putting you on the educational road, so to speak?
The educational road is a great image. And honestly, what we keep saying is you can fix that pothole next year, but you can't fix that kid next year. The kid who is behind, it's very, very, very hard for that child to ever catch up. So every year we don't provide this. We're basically saying to that kid, okay, bye. You're not in the running anymore. So my view is when you drive down the street, the street should be reasonably not bumpy. But when you look up, you should see a future for children and for the whole county children. That's where the prosperity of our county will lie.
You know, the other thing is, it just strikes me, is seatbelts and helmets for motorcycle riders. They would say, if I don't care if I get hit or not, why should you care? And the answer is, I care because when you have to go to the hospital, emergency room, we pay for that. When you can't work anymore, we, out of our taxes, are paying to support your family. So in a way, having kids who will not succeed, succeed less, brings everyone down and really is a dampening on the whole community. So it's not just that these kids are getting things, money, and my kids aren't. It's that the whole community has a dead weight on it.
That's exactly right. And conversely, that when kids do better, the whole community does better.
Yeah.
That's where the prosperity comes from.
What's interesting is that there still is this support for good quality preschool, because in a lot of our society, we have lost the interest in the common good. It's kind of gone by the wayside, except for roads, I think. Roads and early childhood. How are you answering people who say, well, I really support this, but what about our roads? That's what the county's supposed to be doing. They haven't done a good job. You know, I drive over giant potholes every day, blah, 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 blah.
I think the answer is really pretty straightforward, which is the county does a lot of things that are not strictly mandated by statute. Roads are, but we do a great deal. We provide libraries, we provide parks, we provide after-school programming, we provide a huge amount of work in literacy, and this is very related to literacy in the long term. And the county is very committed to outside space and fitness. The county is very committed to alleviating poverty. That is one of the main things that this will do, is alleviate multi-generational poverty.
Could you speak for a second on what high quality? We'll get that.
Can
when
you
come
answer
back
that when
break.
We come back? And if you want to call in and ask a question, our number is 520-790-2040. We're talking with Penelope Jacks on early childhood and preschool and what the benefits to our whole community would be. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. And this morning we are discussing high quality early education and the Pima County Preschool Investment Plan. That's such a good name.
Thank you.
And we're speaking right now with Penelope Jacks, who is the former Southern Arizona Director of Children's Action Alliance and also the chair of Strong Start Pima. So, over the break, we talked about what does high quality early education look like?
What it looks like is kids being engaged. It doesn't look like kids, 3 and 4 year olds, doing academic work, but it learns. That's no good. It's learning to engage with other children, learning about curiosity, learning what classroom materials look like, playing in a creative and engaged way, teachers who are trained in child development. What it doesn't look like is kids sitting in front of a computer screen or watching videos. Kids in poor quality child care may be safer than kids at home or being cared for by their older sibling, but they're not really getting ready for school. What we are looking for is kids who come to kindergarten ready to do what kindergartners are supposed to do, which is to begin to learn.
You know, about 100 years ago, or whenever Maria Montessori was alive, she said, play is the work of children.
Right.
And it's how they learn how to relate to each other. And this gives them skills in all sorts of ways, interpersonal skills as well as getting ready for kindergarten.
It absolutely does. And what we know, the research has shown very clearly that the good effects of high-quality preschool last well into adulthood. But that is not the case for kids who are just in babysitting. They really do not get any particular benefit, and they are not more ready when school starts.
You had a question.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, you know, we think of anti-poverty programs that make a lot of sense, or job training programs and everything else. It strikes me what's important for folks to remember is that it sounds like when one just says it prepares you for kindergarten, you're thinking, well, so what? Or if it involves just being attentive, doing a lot of things, it's not actual learning. It is learning, but it's a skill set that you think, why do I need to pay for that? But the bottom line, I think, always to remind everyone of, is that it pays off. The studies show that you go to college, perhaps even earn more money, because that goes with college.
Absolutely.
So it's really a movement out of poverty. It's not just that you're easier in your first day at kindergarten, or you're not watching TV, but you're doing something else, but it really pays off. Is there any particular book or research or place someone could go to actually, in a world of fake news, folks might be saying, well, you're just making this up. What could you point to on that front?
There is a plethora of research on this area, but my go-to is the Heckman equation. And I quoted James Heckman earlier. He's the Nobel Prize winner who has spent a huge amount of his latter career working on early childhood issues and the value not only to the child in the short term, but to the community in the long term. And the dollar return. When we first did Strong Start, the business community was not with us. The business community leadership is with us all the way now. Southern Arizona Leadership Council has been one of the leaders. They've committed money to support the program, to help if the county creates the program and funds it. SALC will put some money in, as will the University of Arizona. The president of the university said if he has $1 to spend on education, it would be in early childhood education. So we're delighted with that commitment. United Way has committed to putting money in. So we and several foundations as well, the Community Foundation. So we really feel this is a public and private partnership in the best way with business leadership, because they do understand investment today for return tomorrow.
And what is the cost of this?
Well, it costs $10,000 per child. So we have about 10,000 children we'd like to serve. So if it were fully funded, it'd be a lot of money, $100 million. That is not feasible either financially or honestly programmatically, because there aren't enough places for all those children.
Enough
high quality places, even low quality, honestly,
yeah.
For all those children if they were to show up. So the idea is to ramp up and start demonstrate that this county has the ability to do this, working in conjunction with First Things First, the statewide early childhood group and agency, and then year by year ramp up till every child who can benefit receives it.
Does the business community think about contributing money itself?
They are.
Fundraisers and a bunch of other things. So the only way to start this isn't just through public funds, but the public-private partnership.
Southern Arizona Leadership Council has committed to putting cash in to support it. I think that's great, and I totally support the idea of the community stepping forward. I would like to say, no one does say, well, come on, business community, go out and fill a few potholes. No one says that foundations should be supporting pothole filling. So it does make me a little
Or that you have to be, yeah. You mentioned libraries early, that yes. You have to be a member to actually check out a book.
Right. So I am not happy with the idea that this is being not seen as a full community and government responsibility. But I also understand that it shows commitment on all sides, and so I'm delighted with the people who are stepping up.
That is great. Although I'm always, I think that's wonderful, but what we've seen in reform in K through 12 is it actually can't be done at the level we need by the private, the non-public
That's exactly
community.
Right. There, it really goes to the adage that
although they can kick it off,
charity is not a substitute for justice, and it's a supplement to justice, but not a substitute. There is simply not enough charitable dollars in the world to do what government needs to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Al, did you have a question?
Nope.
So, I do. So you were talking earlier, and for those people who are just joining us, you were talking about the benefit to the community. And sometimes I think this gets lost because if you don't have grandchildren, if you don't have children who are in childcare, you're going, why should I kick in for this? Why should I support this?
Well, I think there's a cash benefit to the community that comes along pretty quickly in the areas of savings of dependency on welfare, crime in the community. Both the sheriff and our chief of police are strong supporters of early childhood because they know that prevention is the major way of dealing with crime and reducing the cost of crime. And kids who attend early childhood education are much, much less likely to be connected in any way to criminal activity. Interestingly, the military is a strong supporter of early childhood because of fitness to serve is a whole nother area that they are concerned about, that they want 18-year-olds who are ready, able to serve, and kids who attend high-quality preschool are much more likely to meet those standards. So it's very much more broad. The general prosperity of the community increases when children receive high-quality early education.
I was thinking, it's often interesting how people who are as passionate as you are get involved in these things. Was there any particular event or something that happened? Just folks often wonder, well, how does someone like you get so? It's just volunteer work you're doing. How'd you get involved in this?
When I retired, I said I was not going to do for free what I used to do for money. And about 2 days later, all of a sudden, I found myself as chair of this committee. So I think it's a passion that you can't just say, oh, now I'm not working for money. I think I won't do that anymore. I was a kindergarten teacher. I've spent all my life working in policy. And this is the perfect nexus of those issues.
So you are still working, just not for money.
Currently, how does Tucson rank in terms of high quality preschool?
We are low. As I said, about 20% of kids attend, which is really just not enough to make a difference. We are looking not to move the needle, but to change the meter.
All right. We are about to wrap up in about 3 minutes, but is there anything that we've missed that you feel is important to talk about?
Well, I think what I would like to say is reiterate what I said earlier. No one is debating the value of this policy. All the people who were yes buts in round one are now yeses. We have a great coalition of people who are supporting it. Now we need to create the political will to spend the money that will give us great community returns in the not very far future. So I would urge people to talk to your members of the Board of Supervisors and tell them this is how we want our tax money spent to really increase the prosperity of our community.
Contact information if folks want to know more about the specific proposal.
They can go to strongstarttucson.org or they can call their Board of Supervisors member at 724-8126.
But probably not on the weekend.
Probably not on the weekend.
But that can be your Monday job. And so this has been very wonderful to have you. And I'm hoping that the community sees the value of it, that we follow what's going on in the rest of the country that says this is one of the things we need to invest in to make our communities better.
And starting tomorrow, The Star is going to have a series on other communities that are doing the same thing.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Wonderful. Well, we will be back in just a minute to continue talking about early childhood. Thank you. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. And today we are discussing early childhood education. We've just finished with Penelope Jacks of the chair of Strong Start Pima. And now we are talking to Monica Brinkerhoff, who is with Child Parent Centers, who is, hold on, I learned all these things about you. And she has over 20 years of experience in early childhood care and education, and has worked as, this is pretty amazing, of your background, a preschool teacher, a preschool director, a coach, a consultant, an administrator, and you've also written a book called The Five Elements of Collective Leadership for Early Childhood Professionals, and works now for Child Parent Centers, which is the Head Start grantee for all of Southeastern Arizona. And when we hear Southeastern Arizona, we often think Pima County. But it is also Pima, Cochise, Graham, Greenlee, and Santa Cruz counties. That is huge.
Yeah, we have a huge service area.
For people who don't know, do you want to tell people what Head Start is?
Sure, absolutely. So Head Start was created during the Lyndon B. Johnson era over 50 years ago as an anti-poverty program. So Head Start provides comprehensive health, nutrition, education, and family engagement services to young children with a target audience of children in families who are experiencing poverty, homelessness, teen parents, and really the underlying, you know, assumption or vision for Head Start is that every child, regardless of their circumstances at birth, has their ability to reach their full potential. We call ourselves a dual generation program because we work with both parents or caregivers and the child as well. So
I just want to put a plug in for Lyndon Johnson. The things that came out of that administration, I think, were so overlooked because of, you know, 18 million people protesting every day in front of the White House. But
Head Start takes those of us of a certain age back to the 60s and other kinds of things. Yeah.
But not only Head Start, also free and reduced lunch, Title I, all these amazing things that were designed because he'd been a teacher in a very poor school in Texas where there are a lot of migrant workers and migrant workers whose children did not speak English. And he just developed, he said, you know, we've got to help these kids. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So were you going to ask something?
No.
Okay. So first of all, what does the research tell us about brain development during the first 5 years of life?
Yeah. So what we know is that 90% of a child's brain develops by age 5. So in other words, before they even start kindergarten. And research shows us that young children learn through their environments and through interactions with adults. Each experience and interaction helps build the brain connections that form the foundation for learning later on. So, you know, I've heard people say parents and teachers of young children are actually brain architects. So they're building the brain for the future. So positive interaction yield positive brain development, and which promotes learning. And unfortunately, the reverse is true, which is why we are always talking about high quality early education. And so in Arizona, 60% of young children live in families where all the adults in the household work. So that means a lot of children are spending time with people other than their parents during the day. So when you put all of this together, that's why the high quality early learning part is so important.
So you don't have to go through the whole day, but what are the things that, what is an early childhood that's good, that's a high quality? What does an early childhood center do that is not plugging a child in front of a television?
Oh, okay. So I think I always start, I could start at the beginning of the day. You have teachers who are welcoming. You have an environment that's safe, that's stimulating for young children, child-directed. We would see teachers like, you know, greeting children, greeting the families, talking with the families as they come in the door, stooping down and talking to children at eye level, asking children questions that help them articulate what they're thinking and how they're being, how they're curious, reading with young children, singing with young children, you know, doing things like, you know, we can all remember from when we were little playing with Play-Doh, playing with blocks. Those are the kinds of things that we would like to see in a high quality learning environment.
So play-based.
Play-based, uh-huh. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the health and safety aspect is also very crucial. And then there's a certain skill set in teachers being able to promote effective interactions between young children, so problem solving when there's a conflict and conflict resolution and...
Sounds exactly like the guest we just had on, Penelope Jacks, talking about the Pima County Preschool Investment Program. Mm-hmm. So you're sort of outlining what a high-quality preschool experience would be.
So Penelope did talk a little about, you know, in the general society things, but what do you feel are the benefits of quality early learning for children?
Well, we know that children with access to high-quality learning environments are more prepared for school, and they typically have better relationships with their classmates. We know that they're less likely to need special education or be held back a grade. They're more likely to do well in school, graduate, and go on to college. And as adults, they tend to be healthier and earn more.
You know, I read this thing once about researching children's stress levels, and they said that being held back was on emotional stress for a child was right below death of a parent, mm-hmm. in that it was very devastating for kids to be held back.
Yeah. And so if we can prevent that from happening by providing high quality early learning experiences in the early years.
And it increased their chances of being a high school dropout by 70%.
Yeah. Could you talk a little about Arizona, Pima County, Tucson, in terms of immigrant communities and assimilation? That is, in some sense, this isn't just helping kids or kids in poverty, but does it also have to do with new folks to the United States and how they get assimilated into the culture quicker?
Well, some of the things we talk about in early childhood and especially Head Start is dual language learners. And I think, you know, for a high quality program, we honor the child's and family's culture. And so I think assimilation might not be the word, but really helping them learn to be welcomed into the environment, the classroom environment, be part of the classroom community, and again, start kind of learning. In our programs, we kind of partner the Spanish-speaking and the English-speaking as well, so that children are kind of eased into learning English in the classroom. So, yeah, I think in high-quality programs, it can be beneficial for helping children kind of enter into culture.
I noticed you said dual language. Is there a difference between dual language and bilingual education?
Yeah, I think those are sometimes used synonymously.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And so we have the benefits for children doing this. Are there benefits to our surrounding community? We're asking a lot of the questions we asked Penelope. Hers was from a political, you know, a policy. Mm-hmm. What should we be doing? But she said, you know, this would be best focused by you on what the actual learning had to do.
So on the learning, in the learning environments, a lot of the things that would make up a learning environment are the same as what we would want to see in K-12. So things like safe settings, skilled teachers, smaller class sizes, and then there are factors that are specific to young children. So things like dress-up play, dress-up clothes so that children can engage in pretend play and work on social interactions and things like that. And then also in high-quality learning environments, we also would want to make sure that there's a curriculum that's followed that covers all the areas of development, so social, emotional, cognitive, and fine and gross motor. And so the reason that that's important is for the future and for the community is those are the things that would set the foundational skills for when children then enter into the K-12 educational system. And going back to the what I was saying earlier about children who have high quality early learning needing less intervention and it's a higher rate of return, that sort of sets society up for having to kind of pay less in the future. So We have research from a Nobel Prize winning economist, James Heckman, and that shows that children with access to high quality early experiences are less likely to use social welfare programs. And then when you combine that with less need for special education or remedial education and add the increased earnings that children who have high quality learning environments early in life, the return on investment for every dollar is somewhere between $9 and $16.
Reminds me of the old Jesse Jackson saying, better to pay on the front end than pay on the back end, mm-hmm. meaning better to pay now with preschool, high-quality education, than to pay later with social welfare, prison. Not that everything ends up that way, but you know
right.
what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another example of that.
You know, another thing that's interesting is the research that Heckman has done on early childhood is actually very similar to this other Nobel Prize-winning economist, Alan Krueger, who died recently, who talked about who found the same thing with K through three, smaller classes in K through three, that there is this lifelong benefit to being in a small class, and less likely to go to prison, and more likely to graduate from high school, more have bigger incomes. They have a lasting benefit study that was done based on a class size reduction program in Tennessee, where they randomly assign kids to different size classrooms. They were able to do this for the first 2 years. After that, parents were going, I want to be in the class size that only has 17, not 35. Mm-hmm. But it's very similar and interesting that these hardcore science, would you call economics a hardcore science?
It's a hardcore social science.
Yeah, it's a hardcore social science.
Natural sciences wouldn't, but the heck with them. There's more than just biology and chemistry to the world.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Monica Brinkerhoff talking about the benefits and drawbacks, if you know of any, of early childhood.
Okay.
So we will be right back, or not. If you have any questions, give us a call at 520-790-2040. Thank you. Hi, we're back. You're listening to the Smart Talk with Robin and Al, and we're here every Saturday. And today, our guest is Monica Brinkerhoff. And one of the things what we're talking about is early childhood, what high quality early childhood education looks like.
It seems that it's all positive. It seems that the studies support it. It seems that Penelope Jacks, who was on earlier and who is helping with the Pima County Preschool Investment Program, getting passed, that everyone seems for it. Why isn't there more action taken for this? What is the stumbling block when everyone's in favor of it, business community, blah, 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 and we don't see more?
Well, that's the question of the hour. I mean, I think that's what advocates have been asking ourselves all along. I think part of it is that early childhood education has been drastically underfunded for years, forever.
Why?
I would say, you know, I mean, from my opinion, just because as it developed, it wasn't considered necessarily part of the K-12 education system. It really wasn't. It grew up in, you know, to kind of child development and preschool, and sort of it was a separate entity, I guess you would say, than K-12. So now we're starting to talk more about the birth to career pipeline and really understanding that instead of these siloed systems, we kind of really need to think about education from birth all the way until we enter the workforce. So I think the reason why, you know, to your question, why hasn't there been investment? Part of the thing with early childhood is that it costs a lot of money to provide high quality. So, and it's important to note that low quality can be detrimental to children. So we don't just want low quality centers. I mean, that can actually be a bad thing. So we want to make sure that they're high quality, and high quality costs money to have those positive interactions I talked about earlier, you need very, very low child to staff ratios. And so in order to, because the quote unquote profit is made by how many children are in the classroom, high quality centers really have to make a commitment to quality almost over profit. And, you know, all those maintaining those beautiful, high quality, safe, engaging learning environments is also quite expensive. So, but really, it is the staff, it's the personnel wages that is the high cost. So, you know, I think there hasn't been a public investment in early childhood, really, to speak of. There's been a little bit here and there, and I won't talk about those funding streams because that's not time for now.
But the weird thing is this is so popular. The first 5 years fund found 82% of Republicans, 85% of independents, and 97% of Democrats support making quality early education from children birth to five more affordable for working families. So you have this you have this interest and support in the community, but it's not turning into action by our policymakers.
Can you say background checks? The same thing in the gun legislation, the public's in favor. Could you say, is this too bold to say that early education is more important than high school education?
Well,
if you go wrong early or abandon early, the consequences, since one builds on another, is more. College, you can almost float through and you could still be whatever you are, maybe high school a little less. But the further back you go, the earlier you go, the irony is, the more important it is. Everyone thinks it's important I get into this college. Actually, it may be just as important that you had the Harvard of preschool rather than the Harvard of Harvard.
Yes. And, you know,
New York City is a perfect example of that, with preschools that are costing $50,000.
Yeah. Well, where my son moved out of Brooklyn to out somewhere out west. Yeah.
But the downside of that would be for boys, actually, because of brain development. So if you have high school ending at 16, the people who are going to be the most affected are boys whose brains are not ready to go on to college.
So,
we have to sacrifice someone, males.
I got it. So we should graduate girls from high school earlier and keep boys in longer.
So I think the point is,
can we have it all?
I wish. I think the point is that not that high school is less important, but by high school it's already too late.
So you just really have to do
a lot more work to, you know, do that catch up. So if we can make, you know, kind of a universal effort in those very early years to set that foundation. That's why we've been, you know, we talk about it, that it's so important, as it really does help in those later years. And I think back to your question about why aren't we seeing some shifts? I think part of the thing that we've had in early childhood is just this breadth of research that's been kind of coming up in the last 20 plus years that really support and the science behind why early childhood is important and why it works. And so that, I think we're starting to see some shift in policy. We've had some recent, even in these kind of like stark budget times at the national level, we've seen increases to the monies that support childcare subsidy. We've seen actually some increases to Head Start. So there really is some shifting. And as you said, it is an issue that's supported across the aisle, across all parties. People recognize that it's important. So my hope is that kind of momentum continues.
Is there a community or a state that you know of that has invested in the way that you think is ideal? That's like the gold standard?
Standard.
Canada.
Are we all kind of down here?
No, I think there are several states that are doing a good job of this. I'd have to look them up, but one that comes to mind is Minnesota. But the states that kind of blend, you know, the local, state, and national funds together. And I think that's really the issue. It's going to kind of take all hands on deck. So national funding, state level funding, local funding, and, you know, community business. It's going to take all of us together. Collective impact.
Do you ever see any resistance along the lines of worrying about the nanny state? That is, we've got kids now in school so much of the time, and now people want to push it all the way back, like you said, almost from birth, in theory. Do you ever hear people talking about that's just too much time in school and kids need more time on their own?
Well, I think
you mean with parents or solo?
Well, anything that's not schooling.
Okay.
I mean, do you ever run into that sort of conservative argument?
It's a good question.
The nanny state's taking over everything, and now mm-hmm. they're taking them out and wanting them to go to school instead of just being home with mom.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, you know, the reality is, you know, I gave you that 60% number,
right,
is that parents who are working need childcare. So they need someone to take care of their baby when they're when they're at work. And so those, we, in early childhood, we have many different settings where what that might look like. So we have family childcare providers who have, you know, it would be like a person that opens a childcare business in their home, and they have a very, like, a small number of children, usually mixed age groups. And so that's one model. Then there's sort of the more typical model we think of like a child care center, where you would have, you know, children dropped off. And so we have so many different options for parents. The parents really should choose the one that fits best with them. And then there's another, you know, kind of aspect to early childhood that's called family, friend, and neighbor care, which is, you know, family members taking care of children when they're not, you know, when they're working. And so I think just the need for childcare is what I talk about. Like, if you're working and you need someone to take care of your child, you have to have, you know, you need that. So
how does this fit in with the, I forget what her name was, the article was in The Atlantic, but it was a response to the Lean In book about, you know, professional women saying, you know, being home with the child is as important as getting out to work. Do you see any possible conflicts between those two sentiments?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if a woman felt like what she felt like it was important to be home with her child, I think that's lovely. And, you know, of course, everybody has a different way that they want to do things. I think that the reality, though, that for most people is that's just not a financial option.
How old are you when this basic stuff, but how old are you when early childhood education starts? The proposals, when would you think it's important to have this high quality stuff? Three years old, four years old?
Oh, we talk about even in prenatal, is there are things that can build, you know, having a healthy pregnancy, and then at the moment of birth, having interactions between a parent and a child, that whole continuum. Early childhood is birth to age 8. So it's that whole continuum of all those years. So
I did an experiment like that when I was pregnant. I played a different kind of music for each of my children when I was pregnant. And they're all different people because of the music they heard. But my question is, so right now there's some concern that because of all the testing that we're doing in K through 12, that the academic side is being pushed further and further down. So in kindergarten, which I hear a lot, is this prepares kids, you know, kindergarten readiness. But kindergarten is no longer play, although developmentally that's what it should be.
Yep.
And instead it's kids who are being asked to learn to write, even though, especially for boys, small motor skills, mm-hmm, not happening.
Right.
And also intellectually, you know, they're being required to start learning to read, which for some kids is going to be okay. And for other kids, it is a horrible thing. And so how important is play?
Play is critical. Play is how children learn all the way to age 8. So if I was queen of the world, I could engineer everything. I would have play-based, project-based learning up at least until third grade. I think that, you know, when I look at some of the models of education in Europe and things, that's what people are doing. That's how young children's brains work and learn the best. So when we talk about getting children ready for school, it does not mean pushing kindergarten down into preschool at all. In fact, that would be a poor quality learning environment. We would never want to see anything like, you know, children working, you know, like watching videos or working on a computer screen without a teacher in the room with that, or, you know, I mean, it's just not appropriate. In early childhood, we are, again, going kind of thinking about the things that are, you know, like creating art and painting and working with clay and Play-Doh, and we have sand and water tables and dress-up clothes and kind of all those things that are really allow for open-ended creative play and problem-solving.
You know, it strikes me that to sell a lot of this, we really need
Hold on, we have can we interrupt for just a second? We have a call. Sorry, I wasn't looking. Hello.
How are you doing today?
Good. Is this Mace? Thank you for calling.
It is. Well, I'm an educator. I've been a teacher 26 years, and I work in TUSD. And you mentioned testing and how we're pushing kids into testing and stuff.
Yes.
And it just gnaws at me, all the stuff we're doing with testing, because we're not educating kids anymore. We're teaching them how to take a test. And the biggest thing in this is they keep talking about accountability for the teachers. And I equate test scores with what we're doing. Imagine if you're a doctor and they're saying the only doctors successful are doctors who have patients who don't die ever. The testing stuff is so far.
So don't take on cancer patients, I guess.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or anybody that's ever sick, or anybody that could possibly ever get sick, which leaves out everybody.
Well, although actually, just for half a second, there is some sentiment that in the future, doctors may be paid not to come in after you're sick, but being paid by how many patients never have to go to the hospital. That is healthy living, eating, et cetera, et cetera.
But okay, but now we're going to talk about education because we only have 2 minutes. Sorry.
Okay. Well, part of the thing is all we're doing is teaching kids how to take tests. We're not teaching them to think critically. And the biggest thing that test scores show is parental involvement and home involvement, because we as educators have very little effect on test scores overall. And it's more to do with their home life and what's going on at home. So when you say, you know, a school is a D or an F and blame the teacher, it's like blaming a doctor who you don't follow the doctor's advice.
So if you were put up between staying at home with parent contact versus some kind of very, very early education, are you saying staying at home with parents is better?
I definitely would say that. My kids all stayed home. Well, my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and I have four kids. And our kids did very well in school, do very well.
Great. Thanks, Mace. We got to run. We're up against the clock here. Thanks for
calling. And there's another call. Thank you so much for calling, though.
Dustin, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is Superintendent Williams.
Hi, Dustin.
County.
Well, great to have you.
Well, sorry, it was short notice. I'm also calling in for Senator Steele's show.
But, well, she's not on. She follows us. But let's talk about preschool education. Listen, we're up against the clock. We got a minute left, so make it quick.
You know what? The studies show that any child that can have quality pre-K, they're light speed ahead in obviously cognitive ability, which is the ability to learn. But it's all the social emotional part that they also get to be a part of, which is what really moves the needle, because it's the care for the kid at the end of the day that we all have to talk about. So parents that can do it at home, that's terrific. But we have such a huge population that don't have that opportunity. And I think that's where the concern is how do we get those kids that don't have that opportunity to get educated and get education the right way.
Okay.
I totally agree, Dustin.
Thank you so much for adding that. And I'm getting the signal that they are about to cut us off. So thank you, Dustin, for calling in. And thank you, Monica Brinkerhoff, and also Penelope Jack.
And we'll see you all next Saturday.
Where you're discussing?
I don't know.
Okay. I'll talk to you. Oh, Kathy Hoffman. Superintendent Kathy Hoffman.
It's you running it, not me, next time.
I'll see you next Saturday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.